Hello and welcome to another edition of Radio Free Radio's Digital Flotsam. I'm P.W. Fenton. This episode has to do with a universal truth, one of those things that can be stated with utter confidence, because while it can't be sufficiently proven, you can search the world, visit every country, examine every culture, and you will not find a single person willing to refute it. What is this simple, universal, and irrefutable truth? All adolescent boys anywhere on Earth will at some point demonstrate that they are brain dead.
Just how low it steeps. You're the kind of fool that always shoots their mouth off, the kind that never looks before they leap. Brain dead. Brain dead. I'm sorry if it seems a little crass, but someone has to be a voice of reason. Get a grip and pull your head out of your ass. Brain dead. Brain dead. Brain dead.
What it is that makes anything forbidden so important to adolescent males. For a young boy, just tell him he's not allowed to do something, and you transform that something into an obsession, a must-do, a quest. Young boys almost universally are not allowed to play with matches. Of course, when you reach adulthood, if you reach adulthood, you learn that there's a good reason for this. Young boys, for the most part, are brain dead, unable to follow a path of consequence beyond, oh, I don't know, let's say, one step. Nowhere in the capacity of a young boy is there the ability to put two steps in a process in their obvious order, like, if I jump off the roof of the garage with this towel tied around my neck so as to represent Superman's cape, I will get hurt. That's just not possible. I think that I just now realize why I felt so immortal in my youth and so vulnerable in my adulthood. In my youth, I was just too plain stupid to recognize even the simplest threat to my existence. This innate inability to recognize consequence, linked with the previously mentioned involuntary obsession with anything forbidden, combines to form an unbelievably dangerous being. It is a wonder that any male human survives to enter their 20s, for they appear to be actually designed not to. I'll give you a great example. One of the things all children are forbidden to play with, as I said, are matches. The ability to make fire. This concept is so basically sound, it is almost silly to mention. But in the mind of a young boy, this concept is twisted into the following obsession. I must play with matches. I was not alone in this obsession. Brain damage is so common among young boys that each of my friends, Ralph, Billy, Arthur, and Deej, shared this obsession. We couldn't have told you why we needed to play with matches, yet we all recognized that we did. The trick was to get matches to play with. We needed enough matches for all of us, so snatching a book of matches from the stove wasn't going to do. So we devised a plan. Books of safety matches came in small cardboard boxes that held maybe 50 books of matches wrapped in paper. One of these open boxes usually sat on the counter at the neighborhood grocery, so that when someone bought a pack of cigarettes, they could grab a book of free matches to go with it. It didn't seem likely that we could get one of those boxes in a grocery store without being caught. But supermarkets were another story altogether. They sold cigarettes by the carton, and therefore would throw a whole handful of matchbooks into the bag at a time. They had stacks of these boxes on hand at the checkout counter, and they were usually stored at the end of the counter where the various sized brown paper bags were stored. It was a simple plan, almost guaranteed to work. I bought a package of Hostess cupcakes. While the checkout clerk was waiting for me to fish out each individual penny of the price out of my lint-filled pockets, my friends crowded around the end of the counter as one of them slipped a whole box of matchbooks under his shirt from the supply at the end of the counter. It was almost too easy. I didn't even feel nervous. And besides, I loved cream-filled chocolate cupcakes. So now we have a whole box of matchbooks. When you have no actual use for matchbooks, other than your curiosity, they can get pretty boring pretty quickly. Light a dozen or so matches, burn your fingers once or twice, and they begin to lose their appeal, even to an adolescent boy. So what do you do to perk things up? I mean, we still have 80 books left. You start lighting them and throwing them at each other. We'll be right back. Well, even this has its limits. But then we noticed something. A match that somebody threw made a really cool smoke trail behind it in a graceful arch. Cool. Do that again. Soon, we learned that if you stick a match in your mouth and wet it just the right amount, and then quickly strike it, it just smoked. It didn't flame. It just gave off white smoke. And if you threw it right after you struck it, it would make this really cool vapor trail the whole distance it traveled. This was very cool. Why was this very cool? Because we were all brain damaged. At this point, probably from licking safety matches. But we weren't completely stupid. We knew enough to be doing this where no adults could see us. We were on the wooded hillside across the street from where Ralph and Deej lived. This was at last actually fun. We went through books and books of matches, perfecting this art of matchbook vapor trails. A couple of times we didn't wet the match enough, and it would start a fire in the bone-dry leaves that were all over the ground. But that really wasn't a problem. Five young boys could easily stamp out a small flare-up with their feet. Soon it became apparent that the real fun was stamping out those little forest fires. Deej began just lighting matches and throwing them. We all laughed as we tried to keep up with all the little fires. We were all stamping our little asses off. We could barely keep up, but it was so funny we couldn't stop laughing. Then all of a sudden we realized that we weren't keeping up. Deej stopped throwing lit matches and joined in on the stomping because we had clearly gone too far. Our little feet were not keeping up with the expanding fire. Suddenly, I got a brainstorm, the kind of brainstorm that only a brain-dead adolescent can get. I grabbed this great big piece of discarded plywood laying in the woods and screamed for everyone to get out of the way. They all complied instantly. They could see the brilliance of my idea. This big sheet of plywood would be like a giant foot. All I had to do was make it fall on the fire, and the huge swath would be put out instantly. Brilliant! I was a genius. I stood the sheet of plywood on end at the edge of the fire, tilted it forward, and let it go. What followed is vividly burned, if you will excuse the expression, into my mind. As the sheet of plywood fell slowly forward, huge flames shot out from the three sides that were not in contact with the ground. The air rushing out from under the board as it fell suddenly ignited five times as much hillside. Our laughter turned to panic as we madly stomped this ever-expanding field of flames. Quickly, it became apparent that we had lost control. All of us had no hair left on our arms, and some of us had no eyebrows. The fire was completely out of control. We ran. We ran straight to Ralph's house, the nearest shelter. As five blackened boys came bursting into Ralph's house, Ralph's mom somehow suspected that something was wrong. She looked out the front window and saw the whole hillside on fire. Instantly, she added up the simple elements. Blackened young boys, including my son, hillside on fire, we were responsible. Oh man, we were finished. A parent knew what we had done and would surely turn us in. Ralph began to cry. His mother was going to tell on him, and we were all going to jail. But Ralph's mother said, "What, do you think I'm crazy? Do you think I need this trouble? I'm not telling anyone, and neither are you." We stood there in stunned amazement. We went from deepest, darkest trouble to merely observers of the drama outside. We watched as the firefighters battled the hillside blaze from the safety of Ralph's living room. We had somehow gotten away with our worst offense of a lifetime, scot-free, because Ralph's mom was as scared as we were. When the fire was finally extinguished and the fire trucks were all gone, we each left Ralph's to go home, amazed at our good fortune. I walked into our apartment and sat down in the living room in front of the TV. My mother sitting on the couch, began sniffing. What was that smell? She addressed me directly. What is that smell? My body stiffened. How do I survive this? I picked up a crayon and started sniffing it. I shrugged to my mother. I don't smell anything. She opened the window and sniffed. She turned around and started to get up as though she was about to check the rest of the apartment, and suddenly she stopped. She grabbed my arm. She rubbed her hand over it. She said, "The hair on your arms is burnt off." I did my absolute Academy Award best. "Oh, yeah. I know what that is. There was this big brush fire by Ralph's house, and the firemen handed out brooms for everyone to beat the little fires down. We're heroes." My mother was horrified that the fire department would let us do such a thing. But clearly, she bought it. I had survived. Now cut to the next day. I am at my cousin's house for a sleepover. I am having a thoroughly good time. My Aunt Bitsy calls me. She's on the phone and she says that my mother wants to talk to me. I take the phone. Sure enough, it's my mom. "Hi, Mom," I say innocently. "Hi," she says. "I just wanted you to know that your friend Ralph called for you today." "Oh, did you tell him I was over my cousin's house?" I asked. "Yes, I did. And I happened to mention how you guys tried to put that fire out." My throat tightened. "What did he say?" I asked. "He said, yeah, after we started it." There was a good 30 seconds of silence before anyone spoke. It was my mother. "Make sure you have all your stuff packed. We'll be there shortly. You're coming home right now, and you aren't going anywhere for a long, long time." So there you have it, another edition of Radio Free Radio's Digital Flotsam. And this edition proves once and for all that it's possible to survive brain death. As always, more detailed credits and links to musicians featured in this show can be found at digitalflotsam.org. And now the ageless boy genius, Alex Waller, would like you to know that...
P-Dub holded the microphone.